Hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Sounds and Sights of Cinema here on WHIE Radio and DVDverdict.com. I'm your host, Clark Douglas. Later on in the show, we'll be checking out some recently released blockbusters, including Sherlock Holmes, A Game of Shadows, Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol, and David Fincher's remake of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. But right now on the musical portion of the program, we're spotlighting the music of a very talented composer named Joel McNeely, a guy who really does have the ability of many of the A-listers working in Hollywood, but just hasn't gotten as many great assignments as the better composers out there. Still, the music is fantastic, and we're going to take a listen to some of his finer efforts on the program today, beginning with a lovely score written for a movie called Sally Hemings, An American Scandal. Take a listen. fine music written for Sally Hemings, An American Scandal, by Mr. Joel McNeely. McNeely tends to write a lot of very upbeat, major key sort of scores, and another one was written for a movie released back in the 1990s called Iron Will. Let's take a listen. Very nice music for Iron Will, written by Joel McNeely. Next up, we move along to an exciting score for a rather unfortunate movie called Virus, starring Jamie Lee Curtis. The score, however, is entertaining stuff. Let's take a listen. Splendid stuff written for Virus. One of the few big blockbusters McNeely was given the opportunity to work on, unfortunately, turned into a critical and commercial disaster. That was the cinematic updating of The Avengers, starring Ralph Fiennes, Uma Thurman, and Sean Connery. McNeely's score was quite good. The rest of the movie, not so much. Let's take a listen. We'll be right back. Music written for The Avengers by Mr. Joel McNeely. Next up, a fine piece written for a movie called Buffalo Soldiers. Thank you.
our numbers, our brothers true and brave, shouting the battle cry of freedom. And although he may be poor, he shall never be a slave. Shouting the battle cry of freedom.
You're listening to the Sounds and Sights of Cinema here on WHIE Radio and DVDVerdict.com. I'm your host, Clark Douglas. We're spotlighting the music of Joel McNeely on the program today, and McNeely has worked a lot in the field of family movies, and we're going to continue the program by spotlighting a few of those, beginning with one of the best movies McNeely's actually worked on, the Disney comedy drama Holes. Let's take a listen. Music by Joel McNeely, written for Holes. Next up, we move to another live-action family film and his music for Flipper. That's music written for the live-action version of Flipper, starring Elijah Wood back in the 1990s. We continue now with music for an animated movie, and McNeely has actually, in the past few years, made something of a specialty of scoring the straight-to-DVD Disney animated films, many of which are terrible, some of which are okay. But this is his music written for a film that was actually released theatrically called Return to Neverland. Let's take a listen. That's music written for Return to Neverland. Let's feature some of his music for one of those Disney movies that actually was released straight to DVD, Cinderella 3, A Twist in Time. Music written for Cinderella 3, A Twist in Time, by Mr. Joel McNeely. Do hope you enjoyed that. Time to move along to the review portion of the program, beginning with our review of Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. The first three Mission Impossible films are strangely disconnected experiences, fairly self-contained exercises in style, which contain little continuity outside the fact that the main character is played by Tom Cruise in all three outings. And even that's a little suspect, as Ethan Hunt seems to change dramatically from installment to installment. As such, it's a surprise to discover that Brad Bird's Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol is the first film in the series which actually seems to have an awareness of the movies which preceded it. Bird actually brings a sense of playful history to the table and creates a movie which fuses the strongest elements of the earlier installments into an exhilarating piece of action movie machinery. Bird's Mission Impossible is a relentlessly exciting flick, hurtling from one massive set piece to the next with gleefully nimble wit and invention. After so many recent blockbusters which simply attempt to beat us into submission with noise and expensive-looking explosions, Ghost Protocol responds in thrilling fashion by actually constructing a great action movie rather than merely buying one. Though he had proven himself as one of the giants in the field of animation, Bird makes a surprisingly seamless transition to live-action filmmaking as he deftly juggles savory bits of humor, heart-pounding suspense, involving character development, rich locations, and entertaining plot turns. From the Dean Martin-enhanced prison break at the opening to the unexpectedly resonant finale, Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol keeps us hooked. The series has always been entertaining, but Bird takes it to a new level of exhilaration. I give it a rating of 4 stars out of 4. Speaking of movies which attempt to beat us into submission with noise and expensive-looking explosions, do you remember the scenes in the first Sherlock Holmes film in which Holmes would imagine how something might play out in slow motion before actually following through with his plan at regular speed? Those moments were reasonably entertaining, so director Guy Ritchie has responded by giving us a sequel which occasionally seems to be comprised of nothing but endless variations on those scenes. Sherlock Holmes: A Game of Shadows is a busier, more flagrantly stylish affair than its predecessor, though that doesn't necessarily make it any better. The first third of the film is actually a little cringe-inducing, with clunky bits of dialogue which stick out like a sore thumb and too many moments which feel like cheap fan service. Things get much sillier, and much better in the second half, as the film indulges in countless non-sequiturs, bombastic plot developments, and thunderously dramatic showdowns filled to the brim with amusingly ominous pronouncements. Robert Downey Jr. and Jude Law are once again modestly entertaining as Holmes and Watson, and Jared Harris's Professor Moriarty is a stronger villain than Mark Strong's Lord Blackwood, but the actors often struggle to make an impression in the chaotic din of Ritchie's direction. It's fun in the way that drinking too much is fun. It's enjoyable at the time, but eventually gives you nothing more than a headache and some hazy memories. I give it a rating of 2.5 stars out of 4. And finally, the manner in which Stieg Larsson's The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo has turned into a pop culture phenomenon is something of a mystery to me. Sure, the story is certainly compelling, but it somehow seems too seedy and relentlessly dark to take hold of the mainstream in the way that it has. The book is read and discussed by soccer moms as enthusiastically as a best-selling Oprah Book Club installment, and many people who traditionally avoid intense, violent, R-rated films have eagerly lapped up both the original Swedish version and David Fincher's remake. Perhaps the reason it's so easily digested is that despite the tale's remarkably brutal, unsavory moments, it never really digs too deep beneath the surface. That's ironic, considering that it's a story about evil existing beneath the surface of seemingly ordinary lives. This isn't really Fincher's fault in the case of the glossy, expensive new American version of the film, as he's brought his technical A-game to the material. What I'm getting to is this. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo isn't exactly Seven or Zodiac. Unlike those films, this one's simply a surface-level mystery which only flirts with being truly substantial. Even so, Fincher transforms the material into a thoroughly involving surface-level mystery, and demonstrates just how easily he can elevate middling material simply by filtering it through his precise, thoughtful, icy sensibilities. Fincher's version of the story is more accomplished than the Swedish version, on almost every technical level, though the tedious score by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross is getting vastly more praise than it deserves. Even so, the Swedish film handled its central characters a little better, as Daniel Craig seems miscast as the hesitant journalist who gets in over his head. Craig strides through the movie with unflappable confidence. He's too much of a movie star for the role. Rooney Mara fares a bit better as the title character, though she seems flatter, needier, and less dynamic than Noomi Rapace did. Still, these are relatively minor issues which pale in contrast to the virtues of the storytelling done by Fincher and screenwriter Steve Zalian. Like their Swedish counterparts, they've made a very good film. But the basic flaws of the source material, particularly a bland secondary subplot which occupies much of the film's final act, essentially forcing the story to push forward long after it should have ended, prevents them from making a great one. There are great ideas, great moments, and great characters in Larson's novel, but the book won't be turned into a great movie until someone is bold enough to admit that major changes need to be made. In the meantime, we have another very good version of the story, and it gets a rating of 3.5 stars out of 4. That concludes our time together on the program today. I do hope you've enjoyed the show and that you'll join us again next week for more music and movie reviews. Have a great week, everyone. Back at you later.
Proudly swept the rain clouds by the cliff, as on it glided through the trees, still following with glee Faleco. Yahi Lehuva of the valley, hello, how, hello, how, Ike ona ona noha ikoli. One fond embrace, ahoy, heya, heya, until we meet again. Again.